This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, Multiplying Authentic Leaders, Moving Society. It's wonderful to be with you. We certainly need authentic leaders. We need to move society, definitely in South Africa, but many other places in the world. I'm Adrian Groenewald, as always, your host, presenter, facilitator of the conversation, and with me, Louis Groenewald. Louis, welcome.
Thank you. Looking forward to today specifically, Adrian.
We call him the old man to bring the wisdom to the show. All things leadership, go to leadershipplatform.com. One word, two P's in the middle. It's our leadership master class for an hour. The first half hour, we try and focus, as always, on authentic leadership. So we get really interesting guests to come and share their views on authentic leadership. Then we debate and discuss it as a panel. Today we have Dr. Paddy Pampalis of the Coaching Center and also the Integral Africa Institute. In my view, one of the pioneers of the coaching industry in many respects. But we'll look at that more in the second half of the show. The first half, she's been working with leaders for many years, writing about it, studying it, and in many respects, one-on-one with leaders that make a difference in society. Paddy, it's really good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. Lovely to be here. And thank you, Louis.
All the way from Cape Town, we're sitting in Gauteng and having this conversation via Skype. It's really exciting. Paddy prepared, as we always ask our leaders to do, a couple of statements that best describe to her what an authentic leader is. And I know a few months ago she and I also had a long telephonic conversation around these issues and more. So I'm expecting that any leader, every leader, will learn something from today's conversation. So Paddy, we're going to take one by one. And it's no surprise to me that one you raise, let's start with this, and it's probably not in an order of importance, but you start with listening, that an authentic leader listens. But give us your view of the level of listening we're speaking of here.
Thanks, Adrian. I think this is one of the hardest skills to ever really practice and to master, the capacity to really listen. We often hear, a lot of people will know that is a certain description being bandied around, that we can hear things, but are we really listening? One of the concepts I have is around listening not to hear yourself speak, but really entering the world of the other. And that engages a competency or a capacity for empathy, I guess. It also engages a capacity to get out of the way. When you're listening, to see and entertain and really inquire into what's going on in somebody else's mind rather than what's going on in your mind. What we often do, I think, is actually listen to respond, listen to put our own points of view across and wait for the gap. But this capacity for listening that we're talking about is, I think, really engaged with a number of the other things that we'll chat about, and that real deep capacity to get out of the way while you actually seek to understand the meaning that somebody else is trying to express to you.
Yeah, the thought that comes to me right now is we could have a conversation just about this for probably 30 minutes or longer, because it's the most common thing mentioned in many respects of what leaders need to be able to do, but it's without any doubt one of the weakest attributes, I would think, of most leaders. Do you think I'm right in saying that?
I think it is, Adrian, because it's not just a tangible skill. It's not just a body position. It's not just giving of information. When we talk about listening, listening with the whole body, it's listening with the heart, it's listening with the gut, it's listening with the mind, and it's listening with something beyond that. It's the capacity to really hear, to not be reactive in terms of your own ideas. And one of the things I always talk about is certainly not to colonize somebody else's mind.
I was going to go to that, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Not to colonize someone else's mind. It's a very political word these days, but of course, what do you mean by that?
Very. Well, I mean exactly that, that part of it is landing in somebody else's mind to be able to persuade them to your point of view or to grasp something and inside of what they're saying, so that you can actually and this is not wrong, because sometimes the purpose of listening is for that. You know, what is it? Are you listening to engage in a debate, or you're listening to engage in dialogue, or you're listening really to understand? Or are you listening to see what other information somebody needs? So there are a number of things, a number of areas that, or purposes for listening. But when we're truly trying to listen to somebody else's story, that colonizing is, many of us, I think, listen to go, oh my goodness, I agree with that. I don't agree with this. And I'm going to soon show you how I don't agree with it and try and persuade you, so that I can occupy a part of your mind to bring you over to my kind of thinking. And real listening is about entering the other person's thinking and exploring as many perspectives in that thinking before you even give your point of view. And that's the hard thing.
So I know we've got to move on to the other points, because time is always an issue, but what would you give as the main reason, or two, very briefly, why leaders struggle with this kind of listening?
I don't think they've done the work to actually manage their own anxiety, Adrian. I think, you know, and I use anxiety in rather a big frame, because we're either anxious to get on with a job, we're either anxious to close some sort of conversation, we're either anxious to get to the next thing that we have to get to, and that anxiety actually shuts down. We don't have enough space, enough time to actually give this process that we call listening and reflection. That capacity to be reflective really comes to one of the other ones that I talk about, of being able to be very present.
Okay, so we're going to get to the present one, which I really like a lot. Louis, quick comment there. It's a bit like now, we have anxiety, we've got to move to the next point, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's life. We can't listen enough about the principle of listening, which is probably the most important one, yeah, but the others are exciting. Louis, quick comments on listening before we move to the next one?
That last comment, Paddy, in a real sense, sums up what we experience as well. When you're so busy managing your own anxieties that you really don't have space, and therefore not time to really listen, and therefore you aren't progressing or moving forward, as we would say. Thanks, Paddy.
Yeah. So on point, Louis.
You, there's something you mentioned in your comment. When you listen like this, then you find yourself, not just the other person, which one almost feels it's counterintuitive. If I just listen to you and I help you discover you, how do I discover me? And maybe I'm opening another can of worms here.
I think you've got something there, Arjun. You know, I think you've heard me say this before, that our deepest need is to be seen and our deepest fear is to be seen. And when we want to be seen, when our own ego gets in the way, when we are unable to put away our own anxieties or our own ego, to actually enter in to a space that is reflective, that is generative, that gives us more than what we entered into the conversation with, then we're not really listening. We are really trying to occupy the other person's mind as fast as we can and get on with the job.
As I have tried, and it's one of my weakest attributes probably, is listening, has been certainly until recently. I might be a bit hard on myself, but I do think now that my understanding of it is growing, it definitely is weak. But what I have discovered, when I now tap into real listening, then when you help the other person find themselves or find their own solutions, it does something to your soul anyway, because you've really helped them. You know, you've really tapped into what is best for them. And that, you know, we know when we serve others, it changes us as human beings. So listening is one of the biggest doors that you can open towards finding yourself or growing as a person. All right, let's jump to the next one. The next principle that for Paddy Pompalas, Dr. Paddy Pompalas, describes an authentic leader is the ability to hold polarity. Tell us about this one.
So I just also want to go back to what you said at the end of the last comment there, Adrian, that if we are truly listening, we don't only find the other person, but we can find ourselves, because we can see our biases. But linking in with the anxiety part, one of the things that people try to do is to find a binary solution towards a problem, or find a binary solution and either or, you know, we've got to do this or we've got to do that, we've got to think this or that. It's very hard for many people to hold what we call polarities. And those polarities are those positive or seemingly conflictual poles of a similar situation, like love and power, like backbone and heart, like being decisive and being accommodating. These are all part of leadership that I find leaders really struggle with. They come up with it's an either this or it's either that. We can't be both. And a mature leader, an authentic leader, has really done their own work, has sat with their anxieties, has got to know themselves, and is able to hold that ambivalence, which links into that anxiety. When we can hold ambiguity and ambivalence, we're also masters of our own mind and emotion when we're noticing those things rising in us, but we don't have to act on them. We can hold them and sit with them as things that we actually just have to work with. They're both and. So at times we might be this, it comes to possibly another thing, this ability to discern, wise discernment about when to put one aspect of our leadership forward and when to put the other back. But not to say I'm only this or that, to say I am both that.
Mm. And this ability to hold polarity, would you say in 2017 much more important and more difficult than 30, 40 years ago, I guess, with the speed of things and the, they speak of the VUCA world. It has to be a much bigger issue to try and do this today than in the past.
Well, you know, the World Wide Web has made it that way. We get so much information. We're in the most highly stimulated environment that I think the world has ever known. We're bombarded daily with huge amounts of complexity. I mean, we just have to put on the TV. We just have to look at the news. We have to look at leadership. Where is the truth? How do we hold truth in a world that we're in today? How do we look at and distinguish and make discernments about what is fact and what is made up? How do we get to false news and, you know, what is genuine news? It's the complexity is huge. Yeah. And I guess this capacity to listen, truly listening, comes back in there, because if we really listen, what are we listening for? Can we listen without falling into a bias of our own listening? Can we hold that ambiguity and anxiety? And that comes from a training that leaders often don't do, I think, when they just fall into leadership without taking on what we offer, I suppose, through coaching or self-reflective practice. I think it's hugely needed. It's a wild world out there.
Louis, the ability to hold polarity.
Paddy, what your comment has added depth to this old man's understanding is I've realized recently a great deal that the more you listen, the more you understand the context of things. And then everybody has different channels of excellence. This is a term we use. In other words, the way that suddenly what seemed to you on the surface an opposite sentiment does not become an opposite. It becomes the process of holding polarity, yes. It becomes a channel of excellence. And then ultimately you can definitely reach the same goals of moving in a positive direction. But if you don't listen, you're going to find the polarity or the different understanding.
And an enemy almost.
And an enemy. You're going to miss the channel of excellence. So some people, channels are different to mine. And I'm amazed when I find, but what about their sentiment? They want to move in a positive direction. So what your studies show and your understanding shows that listening can really help one ability to discern another person's channels of excellence as well.
And you're also talking to an ability to hold multiple perspectives, because if we're able to hold ourselves and know ourselves, and we're able to really practice holding multiple perspectives, which means I've got to hold what's going on in myself, I've got to hold what's going on in somebody else, I've got to hold what's going on in the relationship between us. I've got to hold what's going on in the context, the immediate context and the wider context. I've got to hold what's going on in the cultural influence, in, you know, multiple influences all in one moment. That is a huge competency. And unless we train ourselves to really, really be ready for that, and you know, actually something like an Ironman athlete or an Ironwoman athlete, you've got to train yourself in multiple levels, in multiple conditions to be able to be excellent in any given moment. And I don't think we half give that capacity to managing ourselves, to understanding ourselves, and then to be able to listen.
Well said. And you kind of think, gee, was, where do you find these leaders? It's definitely not an IQ issue. It's much more than that. The next principle, and each of these, as I said earlier, we can have a whole conversation about. But the next one that to you describe authentic leaders is vulnerability. Let's have a nice discussion around this one.
It's an interesting one. It's one of those polarities. You know, how can you be vulnerable and strong at the same time? The vulnerability that I have found is that capacity to admit that you're wrong or to admit that you don't know. One of the things that I've found in the leaders that I work with, it's almost like there's a glass ceiling when people get into the executive room, and the expectations that come on to those leaders in real and imagined somehow almost prevent them from accessing parts of themselves that they were hitherto able to do before they got promoted into the boardroom. There's something about, I now have to protect myself, I have to be X or Y, I have to position myself, I have to be this. There are a lot of conditions that are imposed and very realistically come through from the system or the organization in which they're in. But I have found the capacity to really be able to stop and go, you know what? I'm absolutely wrong here, or I'm pushing this because I have a need or I have an anxiety about X, Y, Z. I very seldom hear those kind of conversations over the boardroom table. Being able to be vulnerable allows people to be human.
Yeah, I was sitting with a leader recently who described to me, in a safe environment, when he made himself vulnerable, how much it meant to him when his boss showed some level of trust in him through a certain decision. And I said, did you make yourself vulnerable to your boss, to your leader, and tell him how much that meant to you? No, I didn't. I said, do yourself a favor, think about doing that. If you had to do that, and there's something powerful in the confidence level of someone when they're able to make themselves vulnerable and admit something to themselves, admit it to someone else. That little word admit is powerful. And I'm willing to bet that when he does this, he'll have a deeper, if he does it authentically, he'll have a deeper connection with his leader. But making yourself vulnerable is just a powerful principle. Louis, you want to come in?
Yeah, Paddy, we just did an article report on a leader we've been supporting the last few months. And what a remarkable example of vulnerability is. He's got a tremendous team, and the level of trust amongst the members of that team is quite extraordinary as well. And quite frankly, I must admit, looking at him and the way we kind of discussions with him, his vulnerability is tremendous. You know, can see exactly right into his soul. And he delights in being childlike, enthusiastic, but also easily admit when he doesn't know something. It just comes naturally to him. It's really a distinct pleasure to associate with people like that. But what impresses me is the trust level that is in that team. And I think it's mainly because of this.
Yeah, it brings in huge capacity in a team if a leader is able to show it.
That word makes sense. It does bring in huge capacity in this team, and they have grown in leaps and bounds because their capacity. And this leader has a delight in seeing other people reach their potential. He really has as part of his attitude. And the people really, really want to enjoy their jobs. And they've got a pretty dangerous job as well.
All right.
Well, if I think of one of the leaders. Sorry, Adrian, I'm also watching the time. So
go for it.
Also, just one of the leaders that I work with who has just been, I think he's probably going to be one of those who will take over as CEO of a huge organization. His work with his team over the years that I've been working with him has been able to do exactly what you've been saying, Louis, being able to bring in, hey, guys, I actually don't know this, or I'm scared. I'm scared that if we do this, I'm really scared that if we take this decision with this or if we do this, that capacity allows a conversation to go so far into risk-taking, into possibilities, that having all the answers doesn't allow.
All right. The next point that you raise that make up an authentic leader is to go with the gut, Paddy.
Yeah, I think that's something about intuition, Adrian. How often we're in such a busy world that actually decisions are made from a headspace, from a rational space, with all the evidence, the seemingly logical evidence on the table. That actually honoring the gut and really knowing when something doesn't feel right or when it does feel right and you're standing up against a lot of contention about a certain idea. But that ability, because the feeling that gut experience is actually accessing the wisdom of experience and of all our past wise mentors that we probably had in our lives. So if a leader can truly work to access that instinct, that capacity, not the fear instinct, although that's quite useful sometimes, but that thing where you know, actually this is not sitting well with me, or actually I've got there's such an energy inside me to go with this decision or with this person, to really be able to honor that and to hold firm with that kind of confidence you were talking about. I think that allows for other things to happen.
There's no science to that. And I don't know that leaders are, that they have the courage to do that in today's very visible, performance-driven, pressured world.
Yeah.
The risk of going for your gut feel. I don't know, Louis, your feelings on that one?
I think, Paddy, I've been using expression recently, go with your conscience. In other words, you should have confidence in that. And quite frankly, what you're saying is everybody has got a sense of right and wrong, and everybody has got this ability to go with the gut feeling. I believe it's really going with the conscience, your feeling that is wise and good and morally justifiable as well. It's a beautiful principle, isn't it? I think in that sense we should trust that. Yes, I agree with that.
And again, talking to one of the leaders of a huge, one of our biggest, you know, the biggest worldwide consultancy firms who's retired and I happen to be friends with, I was saying, if you had to think about one thing that you would like to have seen more of, and he said, you know, that people could do the right thing, that they could access their gut and actually do the right thing when it wasn't the popular thing. And we can see that in the world at the moment. I mean, we don't have to look too far.
Can you?
I won't get political, but I think it's very evident in our leadership today about what is this right thing, this gut which knows right and wrong.
How do you teach someone to listen to their gut? Is it possible you can make them more aware of it, I guess, when they're more aware of themselves?
Yeah.
Then I guess that starts happening.
Yeah, I think you can. You know, if you look at the multiple intelligences that we've got available to us, one of them is somatic intelligence. One is, it's not only emotional intelligence or social intelligence and cognitive intelligence. You have to have the cognitive intelligence first to access the others. Because if you haven't got the cognitive ability, you're going to make a mush of a whole lot of things. And Yeah. I was reading something in the news yesterday about one of our prominent people who is now stating that he would like to be president at some stage. And it's really the cognitive capability is not able to be there. If the cognitive line of intelligence is low, I think the ability to connect with your emotional and social and interpersonal and spiritual and moral lines of intelligence are very, very dicey. It's harder to do.
So you need a few components before this gut can kick in anyway, in many respects.
I just want to mention, Arjun, I wouldn't underestimate, though, if one really has a mindset with the other principles mentioned to be vulnerable, to listen, to hold polarity. Quite frankly, all these relate to your guts. What's right? Mm-hmm. What's wise? So don't think if we practice the others, I do believe we'll develop a great deal of intelligence to trust that feeling of what is right within me.
All right.
And Vivian, I'd like to come in with something beyond, you just mentioned wise. I think the distinction between what is ego and what is wisdom is a very important one.
What is the first one? And wisdom?
Ego.
Ego. Ego
when
and wisdom.
One's ego is at play. The distinction between one's egoic needs for recognition, for survival, for power, etc., etc., versus wisdom leadership. We're tapping very much to what is authentic. And I think what we're missing a lot in the world is wisdom leadership.
Partly the I don't know, the speed, the timing. We've got an influx of knowledge, don't we, and information, but it's not leading to wisdom.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a problem, a bit of a challenge we face in this world. We also don't give leaders the opportunity and time to learn wisdom. We're onto them so quickly when they make mistakes, perhaps, or it's just not an easy world in which to gain that wisdom, but yet we need it more than ever before.
Yeah.
Penny, you also say that an authentic leader must have done the work of self-interrogation. Tell us more there.
Yes, that and integration. So to interrogate the self is going back to Plato, you know thyself. Also, to be able to really have I kind of grappled with one's own strengths, with one's own shadow, with one's own ego at some level. And I'm not saying ego is a bad thing. It's a useful thing. We have to have it to kind of get through life. But that self-interrogation is something about, can I critically evaluate my own self? Can I step down? Can I admit vulnerability? Can I say I was wrong and then step forward with strength? Can I hold all the rest of the things we've been talking about? And to be able to then integrate into ourselves in a way where we're not dissociated or disconnected from parts of ourselves. So I'm not all head without heart. I'm not all about profit without planet and people and, you know, all the other good things that we need to actually make ourselves survive, not only survive in this world, but actually thrive in this world. I bring to mind Asher Sharma's book, in which one of the leaders that he interviewed with was the head of a big insurance company. And he's saying of the success of an intervention is dependent on the interior condition of the intervener. And I think, you know, this is one of the things, one of the strap lines that we stand by in our work. The success of the intervention is dependent on the interior condition of the intervener. If we do not know ourselves, if we're not willing to be critical and self-reflective and actually step back or step forward, if we are not in touch and have a mastery of this thing that is our brain, which is not the most useful thing in many occasions because it does all sorts of things. But when we are really able to look at ourselves and work with knowing ourselves in many situations, I think we're much more effective. So most of the education programs deal with, you know, they have one or two modules on self-development, but they don't really go into that vertical development of a human being, which says, actually, how can we enhance your paradigms? How can we bring you to a much more expansive place in which you can build the internal capacity to manage the world? Not just knowledge, not just information, but an internal capacity to manage the complexity of the world.
Patty, just to quickly, how do you develop the self-interrogation against the possibility of, or maybe the fact, that none of us can fully, or my observation, shall we say, that none of us can fully observe ourselves or fully objectively observe ourselves? Yeah. It's almost impossible to be that objective, and also against the possibility of becoming quite paranoid as you evaluate yourself continually and you're hard on yourself, perhaps. You know, that sort of angle, how do you play that against this principle of self-interrogation?
Well, I think you're right. We can't always do it objectively on our own. There's always a subjective element. So having a third person or having a trusted mentor, coach, or someone who's able to help us look in the mirror is hugely effective. But not only that, to have time where you are with yourself and you are able to meditate and see what rises inside of you, and to be able to observe what is rising inside of you, whether it's a feeling or a thought, and be able to look at that and not identify with those feelings and thoughts as though, you know, it is all consuming and it is you. So there are many techniques to help develop this, whether it's actually going into some sort of sport. Again, I'm going to talk to one of my clients who's over the last 2 years done the Ironman. And he said, besides him overcoming the body, what he's mostly learned is how to master his mind and to really be able to deal when he has wanted to give up, when he cannot push himself another moment forward. He has had to dig the deepest into himself in order to find the reservoirs for which to work with. And I don't know whether enough people do that kind of work. I don't know, you know, coaching often is, for us, is a vehicle to do this. But I find in the many of the contexts of the workplace, it's not something, you know, to investigate and to interrogate yourself is not what we do. We go there to do the job. And what I often say to leaders is, what is the first thing that you do when you know, enter your office? The first thing we should be doing is to say, what kind of leader am I going to be today? What quality of leadership am I going to bring into the room today? Or am I going to do the jobs we are good at? The jobs most leaders know how to do, the actual job that they have set out, like, you know, run the business, balance the books, find the products, find new ways to sell things and to cohese a business. But that quality of leadership, even though we have many leaders, I don't know how many people say, what quality am I bringing into my leadership today, whether I'm writing an email, whether I'm having a conversation, whether I'm making a business decision, what is that quality? So obviously coaching helps us, and not every kind of coaching will help this, because some is performance coaching. But the coaching that we call integral in terms of that we work with is that integral, the whole person. You're an integral whole. You have to deal with all parts of you in order to bring all parts of you to the room.
When I'm back in the bush, then I go for a run most mornings of the week with our 12-year-old daughter. And she used to be fit, but she's a little bit unfit now. So we go up the hills, and then I started this metaphor conversation with her, just explaining to her, I know you're struggling now, but I'm sort of jogging behind her and explaining, this is now where you're learning resilience. this is where you're going to persevere, and in life you will feel like you're running up hills. And so I went on this path, and at one stage there was an endless hill up to our house, and as we ran, she went faster and faster ahead of me. I just couldn't figure out whether she was now, whether she's now caught the vision of the principal, or she was trying to get away from me because I was preaching. but she did remember it afterwards, and it's how you take one learning, physically learning that endurance and pulling it through to life. We've got the last principle that you've got around authentic leadership, and you simply say that they have presence. Let's talk about that quickly.
Well, I think presence encompasses all of this. Presence is that ability to be still. It's not to be over busy with thoughts and preoccupation with something else, something that distracts you. Presence is being truly available in the moment to what is going on right now and being able to note everything that is going on. That is a huge, huge quality. I think the thing that stops us from being present is that we don't do the practice. I know as a leader myself, when my team challenge me, who say, Paddy, you know, you're saying these things in one condition, and yet we're not seeing this in you in another place. Mm. Well, of course, I'm human. When I get tired, when I get anxious, when I get distracted, I start going down to a less than optimum leadership engagement, and I have to be onto myself every single day. It is a practice. It is slowing down. It is finding the time to connect both to my heart, to people in my life, to what, to nature, to these things that are essential to us as human beings, this thing that makes us fully human rather than just automatons. This thing that makes us lovable, this thing that makes us wise, this thing that makes us connect to the world with doing the right thing and being able to stand up with fierceness to do that right thing. That is genuineness. And to be able to be genuine, no matter what, people get that. People can feel you. People know it. They might override it, but actually they know it. So I think this thing called presence is not a simple thing. It's a practice.
Mm. I do think of presence, and people immediately think it's this individual like a Mandela who walks into a room and they have presence. And maybe that's part of it, right?
Yeah, it is part of it. I think some people have it inherently better than others.
Okay, I would like to debate, and maybe not today, the role that title plays in that, because you could have a room full of people who believe that President Zuma is such a bad leader, and they'll all have their say. In that specific room, they'll have their say about him very, very confidently. But if that door happened to open, and by some miracle it's President Zuma that walks in, then that title comes in with him. And you will see most of those people rise, actually, and say, "Hi, Mr. President, how are you doing?" And there'll be huge respect. Yes, the respect is for the title. But that's the trick, is to have that sort of presence without your title. A lot of leaders depend too much on the title to exude that presence.
Yeah. And I would challenge, I think President Zuma has got presence in a certain way and with a certain group of people. He has got something that makes people stop in their tracks. What it's informed by and how spacious it is and how able to manage a number of the complexities that we're dealing with, I'm not sure.
Mm. Well, I guess, again, presence for one person is not the same for the other. I actually met him in his house, in his environment, sat down with him, and I was not – I thought that there would be much more presence. I even thought the title would bowl me over, and it didn't in that instance, and that's a few years ago. But it is a very personal thing as well, isn't it?
What I'm saying, Adrian, I think is, you know, one of these things on its own is not enough.
Yeah.
It's got to be a holistic approach to leadership, to the training that we have. We've got this thing called consciousness. We've got this ability to observe ourselves and be conscious of ourselves. let's use it. Let's actually use it to the greatest good and for the greatest good of our own soul, our own spirit.
Mm. We're talking to Dr. Patty Pompalis of the Coaching Center and also the Integral Africa Institute. And I want us to park authentic leadership for a moment and get to know you for the next few minutes and then look at the bigger picture, time permitting. Patty, you started the Coaching Center and the Integral Africa Institute. Just very briefly tell us what that is about. We can come back to it. But just so that people know what you what you've been doing for the last few years.
So, yes, you're right about being pioneers of the coaching field. We started in 2004. I started with my then partner, the coaching center, because, for a number of reasons. And more recently, because of the kind of belief I have in our approach that it really holds a multi-perspective capacity-building approach, which is integral. We have started the Integral Africa Institute and trying to bring some of those approaches and really work them in with the African philosophies so that we have something that is really pertinent for us working in Africa, but also globally. And we've also started the Ubuntu Coaching Foundation, which is our NPO arm that we utilize to offer resources from both of these other organizations into to develop work in the community.
So, I mean, it's a full plate that you have. And I'm also tasting the coaching center and the remarkable content that can turn people into or assist them to become really solid, well-balanced executive leadership coaches or life coaches. It's a fascinating journey. Now, before we look at that a bit more, I want to know how you got into this game, into this field. I know you studied psychology years ago. Just tell us a little bit about that. I mean, this has been a long journey, I know. But the highlights, what got you into this world?
Well, it feels like I've come back to something, because when I was in what was then known as Standard 8, I started with a friend of mine, the Human Relations Club. The Human Relations Club was about making some of the wrongs in society right and working with some of the things that were unjust. So there were a number of things that we tried to help in a number of areas. I then went into teaching. I thought it would be a useful thing to do, although my heart was set on psychology, but I did do my teaching degree, and the activist in me was really aroused, because that was in the 1976 riots, and I was part of the SRC and working on that frontier. Part of my inherent thing is about injustice. And obviously, growing up in South Africa, there were a lot of injustices, and it just made no sense to me that people could behave as they could behave against other people. And that's been a predominant driver for me right throughout. So teaching was one way. In my second year of teaching, I got the headmaster fired because of the way he was not single-handedly. There were four or five of us that really did it, but I actually went to the department and said, you can't allow somebody like this, a leader like this, to actually be in a position of this. So my activist part of me was there. But then I wanted to understand more. So I was teaching, and one of my subjects was the counseling part of teaching. I wanted to know more. I went into psychology. I combined educational psychology with a clinical internship, and then started a center in Alexandria. At the same time, I was working with a program called Race Awareness and Leadership Initiative for young people, cross-culturally around schools and education. The stint in Alexandria was also very interesting, because we were had to close down because of riots again. I then opened a center in Johannesburg in Rosebank, Parktown, which is still standing, called the Child and Family Center.
Sure. Amazing.
Where that is still running today, but we used a multidisciplinary approach of many therapists to work with children, adults, and families. From that, in the psychotherapy room, I had a lot of my clients coming to me from various walks of life, and I thought, gosh, these psychological skills have to get out into a bigger field. And I started really understanding a little bit of coaching in the late 90s. It started taking traction in the States. And I moved from Johannesburg to Cape Town. My partner then and I decided that we would start a learning center because, again, we were very interested in helping people to lead more informed lives and bring consciousness through. But I had the opportunity in the early 2000s to do my doctorate in executive coaching. There were five of us who qualified then, the first who'd ever done an academic qualification in executive coaching in the world, which was quite a milestone. And we were part of setting up the standards and the training practices. We were pioneers in building Commensa, and worked globally with the bodies, the professional bodies, for bringing in standards and criteria and ethics and competencies for coaching.
Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, in this, the coaching center, where you're very involved in transferring those skills. And there's so much to talk about just when one looks at your journey and what you've done. We are a nation of activists. You're right. I also have a bit of that in me. But what is, I have one quick question. If I sat next to you on the plane and I said, what is your mission? What's your purpose in life? What drives you? What would you say to that?
Sure. It's around waking people up. And I don't say that arrogantly because I've done the journey myself. I've had to do the internal journey of waking myself up, of dealing with things that were painful for me. And the only way to enlightenment, if I can use that word, is to really be informed, to actually know the self in order to know others and to have impact in our environment. So there's something about me bringing healing and consciousness in whatever capacity I can. And the capacity and the way that I can do it is by training other people, sharing what I've got. There's a lovely African quote that says, you know, when I go to my grave, I want to go empty, having given back all that I have inside of me.
That's you in action.
Yeah. And certainly if I can, you just have to look at the world. And that sense of injustice just is my driver. I kind of go, my gosh, we've got to wake people up. We've got to get them to grow up. We've got to get them to face up and actually – yeah, not destroy ourselves and the planet. It's an idealistic state, I understand, but I'm going to continue doing it.
But let me ask you, what does our society need most? And Louis, you can come in here when Patty's commented. It really feels like we are slowly or maybe even fast slipping into a huge black hole of toxic leadership. It's just a downward spiral. There are lots of pockets of excellence which keep us alive and hopeful in many instances, I think. But let's be frank, it doesn't bode well. What do you think our society needs most? Maybe in the context of leadership, but even broader.
Yeah, Adrian, I think there's the conversations that are going round and round and round because one can fall into despair. And it feels like there's some force that is beyond the average person to actually deal with. There's access to money and greed and I think a perversion of what is valuable in the world. I think it's an egoic state. I think there's a sense of huge entitlement and a sense of dissociation. It's almost like we're living a movie where people are omnipotent, where they think they can do whatever they want to do. So how do you counteract this? How do you counteract all the very sad things that are happening against a lot of power? How do you speak truth to power? So I think we have to start. I think we have to start holding ourselves open to the simple things in life that bring us beauty and joy, that comes to delighting in music, delighting in a good day's work, delighting in a job well done, delighting in making a contribution, delighting in really giving back in some of the good old, so-called old values, but with a sense of purpose, with a sense of engagement with self and with others. So you know, there's often this thing about the West is so individually driven and the Africa is more collectively driven. I think it means both. But I think it's people like yourself and myself and many other people that I work with that we have to continually hold ourselves in a space of strength to continue doing the work that we need to do. I do think there's going to be a tipping point when those who are good people, who know, who can access the gut, who know the right thing to do for our children and for our planet, may just find that tipping point has pushed them too far. The thing about nice people is that they have too much give. They're too understanding. We have to be a little less understanding and actually be more decisive to take back a way of life that may be useful. But I do think we are on the way to extinction if we don't.
Yeah, strong words. The old man has a habit of taking notes, so he will share his views based on the notes as well. Interesting, I think of the Zimbabweans. They are really good people. I'm sure you know a few. They're just such good-natured people, educated, great background. But somehow that good-naturedness, I'm not so sure that it's being just to them in terms of how they handle their leader who's destroying the country. So I think I know what you're saying. Certainly from my understanding is there's a time to be an activist. There's a time to stand up. I think we may, my view is, We're behind as far as multiplying leaders is concerned. So in other words, there was a time where we just had to develop leaders and good leadership qualities. Now we need leadership activists out there. But we don't just need leadership activists. We need to multiply leadership activists to almost turn this tide around. And not just any leadership, authentic leadership activists. So you know, we're almost a step or two or three behind what the world needs. And the ordinary leadership development programs out there have failed over the years. Louis, your feelings?
I can't agree more with both of you. Patty, when she mentioned the sense of entitlement and disassociation, is very important. But I think we mustn't estimate we can get caught up in multiple ills out there. But really, people do make a difference. But you only make a difference, really, if you really make sure that your own inner self is on a healthy basis, that you're honest with yourself, that you're childlike, that you're authentic. And I see those people do make a difference. Whether it'll result in proper tipping points towards the good, etc., well, we'll leave that for the future. But I think the important question is there. Each one individually have to decide what they stand for. It's very important. In a sense, you can't stand for more. And the only way you can help other people is when you know what you stand for is sincere, is authentic, and is worthwhile. I think good people make a difference.
Patty?
Yeah, I get that. And I think there's something around us being much more active. I've changed the language in the work that we do to say actually we have a responsibility to challenge the thinking of people that we work with, whose lives we touch, and to ask them the questions. And I think it's a developmental approach. I don't think everybody has the capacity to see beyond what is very important to their own personal needs. And that needs a different approach. So leadership in itself needs multiple approaches. It's not just a single take onto a flat land of experience. It's a capacity to engage with many people's own ability to make sense of the world. So I don't know. I think my job is just to do what I can and touch as many people's lives as I can to make a difference. And Adrian, you'll see as you go through this program that I think what we do is, my belief is that we have something absolutely unique, because our program works with the transformation of leaders' thinking in multiple levels. So people who come on our programs, we've often had it referred to, not by us, but our people who take the program, that this is a very different MBA. It's as tough as an MBA, but it approaches a very different part of the human being. It doesn't make you just good at the job you're going to do. This makes you look at the person you're going to become in order to do the job.
Yeah, and the realization I have that when we look at how little time leaders spend on transforming themselves so that they can in some way, shape, or form touch other people and their organizations, that gives me a bit of a fright. And sometimes in a coaching process, one sees someone once a month for an hour, hour and a half, it's just not enough. It's just not enough. But without going to doom and gloom, I think we are sending the message very clearly, and you've done it so well that we have a crisis, but we're not hopeless, and there's a lot of hope and possibility. But I also don't want to be blind to the challenge that we face as a society. The kind of leaders we talk of here, we don't see enough of at the very top. And we know that leaders set the culture and the pace and so many other things. So we've got a big job ahead of us as change agents, as activists. If we had an audience in front of us, and Louis, I want you to think as well as an old man, I might reserve my comment to this audience. And let's say it's 10,000 leaders. Let's say it's 100,000 leaders. And it's the key leaders of South Africa for a moment that are now just listening to you, Paddy, and you're being called to the microphone. And you're looking to this massive audience. Maybe it's a whole rugby stadium and they can clearly hear you. It's good sound equipment. They will hear you. And you must share with them a 1 or 2 minute message. What would you say? What would you say to those leaders in such a given moment?
I would say that we have to change the definition of what leadership is commonly thought about. We have to engage with our full self in the job of leadership. And that doesn't mean just getting the job and the functionality of what we might do in an organization done. It's about a far-reaching thing that we sometimes give, we say words about, but it's about becoming that ourselves so that we can, to coin a very used phrase, but a very strong phrase, to become the change yourself, become the change yourself. You've got the ability to stand up and be counted, to stand for what is right, the ability to actually go put your body on the line. And that is not through your own perspective. It's about you and the collective working together towards, will our environment live? Will our children have health? Will they have education? Will they have housing? Will we lead a good life? And what is that good life, and can you stand by that? And can you take leadership to get us there?
Louis, just very quickly, that's your final comment, and then we'll close it.
I would say, close to what Paddy said, I would really say that you can make a difference out there, but become the change yourself. I agree fully with that one. Stand for what is right, pay the price, and even if you yourself become exhilarated by what you find at the end of that journey, it will influence many people for the good.
Dr. Paddy Pompalis, that was Louis Groenewald, the old man, but Dr. Paddy Pompalis, our very special guest today. Thank you for joining us from the Coaching Center, making a massive difference through that structure, and no doubt the Integral Africa Institute. And you said, what was it, the Ubuntu, what do you call that, Paddy?
Ubuntu Coaching Foundation.
Ubuntu Coaching Foundation and many other structures that you've touched people's lives through. And, of course, one-on-one every day in your life. So thank you so much for joining us. It's a mouthful, but people can go and listen and chew on it and discuss and debate a lot of these principles. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. And keep doing the work.
We will keep doing it. We're activists at heart. That's the Leadership Masterclass. Next up, of course, our Business Masterclass with Richard Angus and the team. So do stay tuned for that. Cheers, everyone.
This is CliffCentral.com.